son of cheese, half hour, power hour. It's the Halloween edition, uno, Halloween episode, uno. Which means one in Spanish. And I'm being spooky because it's 1 week, less than 1 week to go until Halloween. And so we're going to talk a little bit about October, the spookiest month of the year, and Halloween, which of course, like I said, is less than a week away. And as a group, we have a lot of great stories to tell. I'm Derek Knott of sonofcheese.com. With me as always is Colin Burton of fizzlingpop.com.
Hello, everyone.
And to my left, we have my sister, Heather Knight of Mad at Spam.
Hello.
And way, way across the room is my wife, Heather.
Hola.
And then to her left is my dad, Jess Knight.
Happy Halloween!
And looking very concerned for some strange reason, last but not least, quit frowning, is my mother, Karen.
Happy Halloween!
Oh, that's what you wanted to do? That's why you're all disappointed? You wanted to be the first one to wish our listeners happy Halloween!
Well, let's go back and do it
stole
again.
Her
we
thunder.
We can let her do it,
too. Well, kids, what I want you to do, you don't need no goddamn horror movies this season. All you got to do is turn off all the lights and huddle up real close to your iPod or whatever the hell you use to listen to this stupid little show and prepare to feel the chills, because we're just going to get all spooky. And I'm going to start off with the tales of the deranged and spooky. I think the first time that I believed that I had seen a ghost, I was probably about five. I thought I'd seen a ghost under my bed. The ghost wasn't under the bed. I was under the bed looking for stuff, and I saw the ghost walk by my bed. And Mom, if I remember right, I ran like hell and jumped in. You were sitting in the big brown chair, and I jumped in, and you were pretty concerned because I was pretty damn scared. That lends authenticity to the story now that you're here, so you can say I was pretty scared.
You were scared.
I was damn scared. But at age eight, I was even more scared. There was some, we lived in a house up off of Durazno Terrace in Clearview, and one morning, just one random morning, I walked out of my room, and I was just assaulted, essentially, by this giant wall of sound and fury, this weird ghost that just ran right through me, and I dove about 14 feet across the room and landed underneath you, essentially. You were sleeping in a bed, and I just landed underneath you and was trying to burrow my way underneath you. I was really scared. I can't explain that one. But it was in the daylight, so they weren't very scary. Of course, in scary movies, nothing ever happens in the daylight. But Dad, you've got some tales from the realm of the supernatural which aren't necessarily so benign and happen in the dark. Specifically, I want you to tell us all about some of the freaky shit that used to happen at the Chief Theater.
Oh, man, that was... there was a guy murdered at the Chief Theater back in the 30s, and he was murdered down in the basement in the men's room. The men's room, if anybody had ever been in the old Chief Theater, you had to go down a couple flights of stairs to get to the men's room, but that's where he was murdered. One time, we used to go up in the second balcony. They never opened it, and there would be seats that didn't have any dust on them. I mean, the whole place was covered with dust. But one day, I, myself, and another man, Fred Coleman, were standing on the stage, and Ed Hopley, who was born on the 4th of July, as a matter of fact, was changing lights up in the balcony. And this man walked in the exit. And we said, Ed, who is that up there with you? And Ed looks around and goes, I don't see nobody. And we kept saying, Ed, who is that? And the man walked over and pushed Ed's ladder over. Ed never seen anybody. After the ladder was pushed over, the guy just simply disappeared. And we had a young lady who was fancied herself being a psychic that they had hired. And she went running out of the theater one night after working 2 days because the ghosts were coming up the aisle and trying to get her. And she was, I mean, you can't act that kind of terror. She just was terrified. I mean, just absolutely terrified. But that, the Peak Theater, too.
Yeah, I was about to ask you. You had a real specific incident that you told me about when I was very young. It scared the hell out of me when you were at the Peak Theater. So why don't you go ahead and elaborate on that?
Well, we was changing out our electrical box. So I had to meet the electrician at 2:30 in the morning because he had to get it all done so we could open the theater. And the offices were upstairs for Westland Theaters. And I came up to the door and went to unlock. It had two doors, an outer door and then the box office, and there was an inner door. And I looked through the door, and there stood a man in white painter's clothes. And I thought, for some reason, it just kind of hit me, gee, that's the electrician. And then I'm thinking, how in the hell did he get inside? And he's just staring at me, leaning on the candy counter, staring at me. So I unlocked the door, and I unlocked the second door, and he just turns and walks around the corner. And I went running in there, saying, you know, who are you? What are you doing? There was absolutely nobody. But you could feel this cold, cold air just surrounded. The whole lobby area was just icy cold. And pretty soon the electrician comes in, and I tell him the story, and he looks at me like I'm an idiot, but I go upstairs and tell the secretary, Lynn Sylvester, and I told her the story, and she goes, oh, that was Daryl Hart, or Bill, you know, we don't know which, because both of them had died. They ran that theater for years, and at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning they used to paint in those white painter's clothes. And they had both been dead for several years, but you could just feel the cold, icy air when I rounded that corner to hunt for this guy.
That was pretty spooky.
Sadly,
the Chief Theater is long gone, and the Peak, while it is still standing, isn't really what it used to be.
No.
And at least it's still there. So obviously, I'm sure that at 2-3 in the morning, Mr. Hart still comes and visits the current hippie employees of the Kimball's Peak Theater.
Haven't you heard the story? They seen some ghost in an old church one time, but all they could see was from the knees up, and they couldn't figure out why. Well, finally, a person that did the ghost investigating says, well, it's because we put a new floor in, and they're walking on the
old floor.
Yeah, so yep. They still come. I mean, they can't change it. Even if it was tore down, they would still come, I think.
Now, Heather, you're not immune to spooky crap and sightings either.
No.
Now, you and Mom, here's one of your cues to pull that microphone up. You and your daughter.
That's
you.
Me.
Yeah, or you and your mother,
mm-hmm.
Which is
me.
Also my mother, had a pretty odd experience. Why don't you tell me about that?
Okay. You were living in Denver when you were going to college, and Dad had gone out of town for a golfing thing, probably a protest or whatever, but...
A protest?
Or a player's test.
A protest.
I was protesting that I can't play the goddamn game.
Anyway, whatever reason, Mom and I were the only two home, and I went to go to bed, but I was listening to music. I think I was making a tape or something, but Mom walked by and said goodnight. On she went down to her bedroom, and just so people know how it was, my bedroom was at the beginning of the hall. You walked down the hall, and hers was the last bedroom on the right, and
which
I was on the left.
Across from mine.
Right. So she goes down to go to bed, and I'm sitting there, and pretty soon I hear Heather, and I thought, oh, music is too loud, so I turned it down. Never heard another word. Didn't think about it. Went to bed. Next afternoon, actually, Mom and I were doing some errands. We were running around, and she just said, do you ever have one of those things where you're not sure if you're asleep or you're just almost asleep and you hear something and you're not sure if it was in a dream or if it really happened, but it wakes you up? I said, yes, that happens all the time. She goes, well, that happened to me last night. I thought I heard you call me. I thought I heard you go, Mother. And I said, that's funny. I thought you said Heather. And she said, no. So there was some, it came from like the hallway. It sounded like it came from the direction of her room. She thought it sounded like it came from my room.
You remember this, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, and everything she said goes double for you, right?
Right.
Okay. But that house was haunted. There was an evil presence back in your bedroom, yours and Dad's bedroom, that I could feel staring at me out the window when I mowed the lawn. Also, the bathroom, if you'll remember, the cat would not go in the bathroom. She'd stand at the door and hiss, and if you picked her up and carried her into the bathroom, she would fight to get out. If you were in the bathroom, the first bathroom that was across from your room,
mm-hmm.
with the door closed, you could hear somebody on her bed. The bed was old, and it squeaked. I would always hear somebody on her bed, like somebody was sitting on her bed and then standing up.
I always felt somebody sitting on the edge of my bed. I mean, there were times I literally thought Rita was crawling up on the bed with me, and I would open my eyes and there'd be nobody there. The cat wasn't even in the room.
Yeah. I mean, so we lived in a decently haunted house for some time. But you, Mom and Dad, you live in a haunted house now. Although it wasn't haunted when you bought it, but it is haunted now.
Who did you kill?
I'm getting scared.
We smell the lady that lived in the house, Mrs. Esbander and Mr. Esbander. He wanted to move. She didn't. He was kind of mean to her, and he got what he wanted all the time. But she died just a couple years after we moved in, and she just cried the day we moved in. She didn't want to leave that house. She had raised her family there. But we can smell her perfume several times over the last few years. We've smelled her perfume. You see her in the basement, and
I've personally seen her. In fact, the night that her obit was in the paper, you two were out of town, and
was that the night that you had the concussion?
No, this was different. No, and I never had a concussion.
No, but the night you took the puck to the head.
We did see her, but that wasn't the night that we read the obit.
I saw her. You were crashed out on the bed.
Yeah,
and
but
she walked in and got her sewing stuff and walked back out, and I was like, okay, I hope that's Mrs. Esbander.
Yeah, but one time I was down her sewing room, which was, when I lived with you guys, was my bedroom, and then it has the storage room off of it. I was down there. This was when our cat was still alive. And I was down there getting some stuff out of that room, and the cat was down there with me, and she started to freak out. And it was not like her to freak out. She started running from the door to the bottom of the stairs and back and forth and meow, 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 being real loud. And I finally turned and said, "What the hell's your..." And I stopped, and there was a form in the doorway. And it was so thick that I couldn't... that it was blocking the light that's in that short little hallway. And I looked at it, and I looked at the cat, and the cat looked at me, and it kind of faded away, and I just kind of stopped in the middle of what I was doing and said, "Oh, I'll come back and finish this some other time." And I left because I didn't, obviously, Mrs. S-Band, I don't know, you know, I didn't really feel threatened by it. But it was scarier than hell, nonetheless, to see her standing, you know, kind of floating there.
Well, Rita, our cat, did that more than once. Karen and I, shortly before Rita's death, Karen and I were sitting in the living room, and all of a sudden, a light lit up the living room, and the cat just went ballistic. I mean, just came to a screeching halt and started backing up and her hair standing up. And then the light went away and she was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, but so Mrs. Aspander scared her. She might not have meant no harm, but she sure scared Rita.
Yeah. And also, when we were the house on Hackberry, Jim, your brother, after he died, you saw him several times.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned that you saw him. You were out for a walk and you saw him standing in the yard.
Yep.
On the way back. I know that when Ryan lived with us, he saw him in the mirror. He saw him sitting on the couch. And you had somebody living with you named Christina who claimed she saw him.
She was just staying with me because she worked with me.
Yeah.
And we were working overnights. And for some reason, she just stayed at my house that day. And I was back in my bedroom sleeping. And she said she was sleeping on the couch. And she woke up and she heard somebody walking down the hall. She thought it was going to be me. So she was watching the hall waiting for me to come out. And she said, "It wasn't you." She goes, "It was some big guy. And he went into the kitchen. And I just got scared and put the covers over my head and went back to sleep." And I was like, "Oh, that must have been Jim."
I kind of got a new story. My sister was in the hospital. She was actually in the emergency room, and my mom had to leave for a while. And when she come back, she asked how my sister was doing, and she says, "Well, that guy's been with her." And my mother says, "What guy?" And she thought I had came and was sitting with, and she goes, "Well, it's a big guy." She goes, "Oh, that's my son." And she goes, "What did he look like?" She's a big guy with a red beard. And chills just run up and down my mother's spine.
Because it was her son, but not her son that's alive.
When they went in there, he was gone. And, I mean, there was nobody in there. But it was, you know, the nurse just says, "Oh, yeah, big guy with a red beard was in there sitting with her." So, you know, why would a strange guy come off the street to sit with somebody in, you know, in an emergency room? And but he's been, then didn't you, Heather, the beads.
Yeah. I couldn't sleep in my room for a while at the house because I would keep the door shut, but the cats would scratch at it and would keep me awake. So I thought, okay, forget this. I'm going to take my blankets and my pillows and I'm sleeping in the dining room on the floor. And I had, at the time, I had door beads strung up between the living room and the dining room. And I woke up during the afternoon because I heard the beads clicking together. And I thought, oh, Murphy or Chaz must have walked through the beads and set them off. But they were swinging, and they were swinging so hard like somebody big and tall had walked through them, just swinging like crazy. And no windows were open, no doors were open. It wasn't like it was a breeze or anything.
Taller than a cat.
Way taller than a cat. I mean, but it was like a lot of beads. You know, because I walked through it two or three times to see how they would swing. And they just kind of, like maybe three or four strands. This was like the whole wall of beads was swinging.
Yeah, and you also saw Jim in a dream.
Yes, I did.
And he gave you a warning.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us about that?
He was saying
this involves you too.
Say something.
It's okay. You can talk over people. It's
encouraged here at the pod.
Yeah.
Talking over people.
Say yes.
So, yes.
There you go.
Hey, Mom. Yeah, I saw Jim in the back of a van, and he said, "Don't worry, it's just a little bit." And that was all he said. And I always remember somebody had told me once that if the dead speak to you in a dream, that's because they have a message they have to get across. So I, for like 2 days, it was like, what the heck did he mean? It's okay, just a little bit. It'll be okay. And then like 2 days later, Mom and I were in a car accident, but it was okay because it was just a little car accident.
A little bit, yeah. And Dad, you saw your dad in a dream, and he had a message for not only you, but this was back when the miners were trapped in the mine in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So, well, why don't you set the scene? What did your dad, you know, why would your dad have come to you in this dream specifically?
My dad was a coal miner all his life. He died of black lung and silicosis. He mined coal in West Virginia and uranium in Colorado and coal in Colorado. So he was a coal miner. But one night I had a dream, and
I looked up, and him and his twin brother, Ellsworth, were standing at the door. And they were dressed in their miner's suit. They had the hat on, and they had the light, and they had the packs. And I says, what are you doing? And he says, we've been picked for a mission. And I said, what? He goes, yeah, we've been picked for a mission. He says, and it's going to be okay. Yes. Yeah, they were going to go help some men. They had been picked for a mission to help some men. And I told Karen the next day, I said, my God, I had this weird dream about my dad and his twin brother Ellsworth. They were standing at the door, and I told her what happened. Well, we go down and turn the TV on. And the miners in Pennsylvania had been trapped in the mine. These are the ones that they actually rescued.
Yeah.
When the guys were rescued, they said, there were men down there helping us. You know, and we don't know how, but there was people down there helping us. And it was my dad. And he came to me and told me. It was as real, you know, as it can be.
So, just very vivid. Very.
Well, every Christmas and Thanksgiving and birthdays, and it hasn't happened for a while, but we used to get mail for my dad and my brother, who never lived at the address we're at. But we just figured it was wishing us Merry Christmas, Happy Birthday, but we used to get mail.
And I got
because you don't
I
get it
mail,
anymore, we get it from
I got
Jim.
Mail addressed to Jim, and I knew he was with me, and I was looking for something that I desperately needed. When we were in the process of buying the house that we're sitting in right now, we were at the rental place, and I was going through. I really needed a piece of paper, one bank statement, one specific bank statement that the mortgage guy needed that we had left out. And I was tearing through everything I had. I was dumping out boxes, and I came across this magazine that had come in the mail a couple of weeks ago, and I hadn't paid attention to it. And I flipped it over, and it was addressed to James Knight, but the address we were at. And so I sat back and I was like, okay, I know you're here. Help me find this bank statement. Where is it? And a voice in my head said, it's somewhere you've looked already. And so I went back to a couple places I had looked, and it was stuck way in the back of a cabinet where it shouldn't have been. But I was led right to it. And I credit Jim for helping us out there.
Yeah, Jim and Derek lived together for a little while in the same dust bunny bedroom. Dust bunny's a story for another time.
Yes,
another
instance of my mother's unbridled anger.
Yes. When my brother Jim was dying, he had cancer. And he was in intensive care, and my mother was in with him, and he kind of sat up in bed, and he goes, please, not now, I'm not ready. And he laid back down. Well, the nurse came into the room and asked my mother, our death angel is black. They go, where is that black man that just came in this room? And Mom said, nobody came in this room. They go, a black man just walked in this room. Where is he? Well, it was the death angel, and Jim had told him, please, not yet. And about 20 minutes later, he says, okay, and bam, he was gone. But the nurse has seen a black man go into that room. And, of course, there wasn't. There was just a small little intensive care room.
Yeah.
He was coming to take Jim.
Now, you said, while Dad was talking about the vision he had of his dad, you have a story about his dad, our grandfather.
Yes. He was telling me that he had woke up. This was years ago. This is when I lived down here in security. But he had told me that he had woke up one night and saw his dad sitting in the chair across from the bed. And I said, you know, this isn't fair. I've never seen a ghost. And, you know, you'd think that maybe a family member would sometime come to me somewhere. And he just laughed at me, and I kind of forgot that I had said it. And I went to work, got home the next morning, went to bed. And when I woke up, the front door was wide open. And I was like, oh my God, why is my door open? But it was locked. The door, the deadbolt and the bottom of the door, they were still locked, but the door was standing wide open. And I know I had shut it and locked it before I went to bed. And I thought, maybe Grandpa Knight heard my ranting and raving and decided to come visit me. And then the next night when I went to bed, I had a dream, and he was there, and he was wearing this red shirt. And he said, that was me. I came to say hi, because you were complaining.
Well, by God. Colin, you got any great ghost stories?
Not really great ghost stories, no.
This is a lot like the radio episode for you, isn't it?
Yeah, this is.
So you like the Ghost Hunter program pretty well? or maybe Spirit Tucker or whatever the hell that one show is?
Ghost Whisperer.
I can't stand Ghost Whisperer. But anyway.
The special effects on Ghost Whisperer, not so special.
I'm just not that fond of what's-her-face.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yeah, I don't really care for her. About the only ghost story that I could even think of might be a ghost story that left me a little chilled afterward was when I was stationed in the Air Force Station in England, and I was living in the dorms, and one night around midnight, 1 a.m., I came awake and somebody was standing at the end of my bed, and he was dressed in the old uniform that we were wearing before the BDUs became the standard uniform, and he was just staring at me, and then as my eyes adjusted, he faded away and was gone.
Mm.
And that's probably the only thing that was really unusual that I can think of offhand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty freaky, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
When somebody's staring at you in the dark.
Yeah.
Now, Heather, not you, Heather, but you, Heather, across the way.
Guachi.
You and I have lived in our fair share of haunted rental properties.
Yes.
Now, the house that we lived in before we lived here, I never really remember seeing anything there, and I don't think you did, but Dad, you claimed that you saw the ghost of an old lady in the back room at that place. You said she came and sat on our love seat while you were sitting there. So go into a little bit more detail about that.
Well, you know what? I don't remember that whole thing, but I remember just walking in the back door and sitting down next to me at in the love seat. And just, it was like an old woman dressed in the old, you know, the dress with the collar and the polka dots. The dress is polka dotted and the collar is frilly. But I don't
like
remember.
Like a 1950s getup?
Yeah, well, more like 40s probably.
Yeah.
And then she sort of slithered down the back side of the couch.
Yep.
Oh, that's creepy.
So maybe you were on drugs at the time.
I might have been.
Did you have too much alcohol that day?
I've been a big, bad drug addict my whole life.
So go ahead. Go. What were you going to say?
What was I going to say?
Oh, well, it doesn't matter. But, you and I, that first apartment that you and I rented, that there was a presence, and not just a presence. It was an evil and malicious presence in that back room, and you have a story about that specifically. I have a couple that I'll get to, but you go first.
What, the one where I was by myself?
Yeah, the one where you were home by yourself.
I'd come home after student teaching, and I was so tired.
Now, before we get in, the apartment was set up in an odd manner. It was kind of a corner apartment, and there was all these odd angles, but it was a two-bedroom apartment. The one bedroom was on the one end, and the other bedroom was at the other end of a long hallway.
Yeah, it had, like, two different hallways that sprouted off the...
Yeah, and this, your bedroom was at that far end, and my bedroom was at the near end, and so you were in that far bedroom alone. Go.
And I decided to lay down and take a nap, and I was just about asleep when it felt like somebody, you know how when somebody puts their hands on the bed around you when you're sleeping and the covers kind of come in?
Mm-hmm.
And I just turned and said, oh, hi, Derek. And then I looked up and there was nobody there.
Yeah.
So I just did what Christina did. I put the covers over my head and just closed my eyes and hoped that it would go away.
And there was another time when you were, I had come home and I was in that back bedroom taking a nap by myself and you were in the kitchen. And I was not yet asleep and something started kicking the bed. It wasn't just one thump. It was repeatedly, violently kicking the bed. And I turned around to see if it was you. And of course, you were not in the room. I was the only living thing in the room, and so I got up, got the hell out of that room, and I was like, well, I'm not taking a nap before dinner now.
You used to see things out the window, too.
Yeah. I saw a vision, but I'm pretty sure I had a friend who was murdered, and I'm pretty sure at that time that was who I was seeing out the window, because it was somebody with a head wound and a coffin. But,
that's a little spooky.
That was before they caught her killer, if you remember, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was right around the same time. But I was sitting in the living room of that apartment one time, and all of a sudden I heard a pop, pop. And we had these two, not sconces, but they were candles in a hurricane glass on stands. And I looked up in time to see two things hitting the ground. And both of the top, just the top parts of these hurricane glasses had just popped off clean. And landed on the ground, landed on the carpet. Couldn't quite explain that.
Well, that was also the apartment when I was putting away dishes. It was a huge kitchen. It was, like, long and curved.
Yeah.
And I'd put the bowls away in the far cupboard and came back to the dishwasher to unload dishes. And it just flew open, and one of our big ceramic bowls flew out and hit me in the ankle and shattered into, like, five pieces. And I was like, okay.
Well, that place burned to the ground after we left.
Yeah, as soon as we left, that unit burned to the ground.
Yeah.
And really?
It was like 2 weeks after we moved out, that unit caught fire.
Yeah, because there were several units at the complex, but that specifically one burned to the ground.
Well, your mom's got a story about me running to get the car in a rainstorm. You need to tell that story, Karen.
Yeah, why don't you?
We were at Gunther Tootie's. And we were getting ready to leave, and there's just that little entrance way there, and I was standing there because it was raining cats and dogs.
Literally, cats and dogs were falling to the ground,
and they were
and exploding upon impact.
Okay, that just means it's really raining hard.
This is the colloquialism.
It's like tiptoeing through the Tule Wash.
Go ahead.
The Tule Wash.
So Jess was going to go get the car and bring it by and drive by so that I wouldn't have to run out in the rain, too. As he's starting to go across the parking lot,
running.
I see a truck actually, coming straight at him. And I was like, I couldn't say anything because it was just, you know, it was there already. And I just knew that he was going to get hit by that truck. All of a sudden, he just stopped dead stopped. And he said something stopped him. And so we think it was his dad or his brother. Someone saved his life. You know, just watching out for him.
Wow. When I was, I thought you were going to say it was Ghost Truck, and it went right through it. That would have been such a, just a tip from me to you next time you tell that story. Ghost Truck. Yeah.
When I was about 10, I was in Cub Scouts, and we were up hiking in up in Canna Creek.
This your UFO story?
No. And we were on this large incline, and it was kind of shaley and slick. Well, I started sliding from the top, and I couldn't stop. And they tried to grab me as I went by, and I just kept sliding. There was about a 40-foot drop-off at the end of this slide. And all of a sudden, this kid in this brown leather coat grabbed me and stopped me. And I said, "Oh, man, thank you." And he goes, no problem. So the scoutmaster comes scooting down on his butt, and he goes, "My God, how did you stop?" I said, "Well, this kid stopped me." And I looked over there, there was no kid. He goes, "What kid, Jess?" He says, "You just stopped just before you reached the bottom." And all I can figure out is my cousin Lenny. Lenny died when he was about 14 or 15, and he was we never knew him. But I told my mother this story, and Lenny used to have a brown leather coat with a fur collar, and that's the kid that stopped me. And I described him. She goes, "Oh my God, Jess, that's your brother. That's your cousin Lenny."
Ew, I've got chills. I don't think I've ever heard that one.
You never heard that story?
No. Oh, it was. I've heard that story, but I had forgotten it.
They come down to get me, and I said, "The kid in the brown leather coat got me." And they go, "Jess, there was no kid in a brown leather coat." But there was. There was a kid in a brown leather coat.
Now, we're running out of time for this for Halloween episode uno.
Happy Halloween.
So before we get to the end of this particular episode, Mom specifically, and there's a lot of people in the world that do not believe that Ouija boards or Ouija boards are real. But you forbade us to have a Ouija board when we were young because you claim they are real and that they're dangerous, and you have a specific story as to why.
Well, I don't know that I would say they're dangerous. I've just heard that, you know, reading that and a lot of people talk about it. You would not let us have one because
you had an experience.
We did have one. My friend from Denver had come over. It was right after Christmas, and we were doing the Ouija board. It was only her and I, and she wanted to know if there were any spirits in the room, and the Ouija board went to yes, and so we're like, "Well, who's here?" And the Ouija board spelled out Bobby Warren. I didn't make the thing spell out Bobby Warren. Paulette didn't know Bobby Warren. Bobby Warren had died. He was in my class in school, and he had died.
And he had a crush on you, apparently.
Oh, no. Oh,
I
think he got
afterlife.
I want to be Bobby's girl. That was for Bobby.
One for me. One for my homies.
So, for peeps.
That's it. So Bobby Warren spelled out his name and left? There's nothing more to the story?
Well, maybe he was the one in Grandma's house.
No, I claim that the ghost in Grandma and Grandpa's house was Anton, the patriarch of the Whittegren family. But we'll get to that on the next episode of the Son of Cheese Half Hour Power Hour.
Thank you for
joining us on this less than a week before Halloween episode of the big program. With us this week, Colin Burton of FizzleAndPop.com.
Goodbye, everyone.
Heather Knight of Matted Spam.
Bye from the pod.
My wife, Heather.
Bye.
My dad, Jess Knight.
Fuck Mont Rose.
And my mom, Karen Knight.
Bye.
I'm Derek Nutt of SonOfCheese.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next Wednesday, which is All Saints Day, the day that the dead do walk the earth. They rise on All Hallows Eve, and they walk on All Saints Day. We'll be back with more tales of the supernatural next Wednesday.